The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Got an idea for a topic? Email us at newsmakers@krla870.com. That's newsmakers@krla870.com. Sunday Morning Newsmakers with Larry Marino, AM 870, The Answer.
Time for us to check in with Jim Ellis, ellisinsight.com, for a look at the week in politics. Jim, I hope your Thanksgiving Day was acceptable. What did you do for Thanksgiving?
Oh, I had family over and unveiled my new renovation of my house, so I was very happy.
Very good. Very good. Well, sounds good.
Hopefully you had a great one as well.
Indeed. I had both pecan and pumpkin, so I didn't have to decide which pie. I just had them both, you know.
I had the pumpkin and apple. I always have to have the pumpkin.
There you go. All right, the week in politics, you want to focus on the House, as Republicans indeed will gain control of the House by not by much, by just a few seats, and it's yet to be worked out. And you say that there's a couple of races we're watching, and all that may have an impact on who gets to be the House Speaker. It sets up a bit of a competition potentially. Explain.
Well, we've got an interesting vote coming on January 3rd when the House gets sworn into or the new Congress begins. The first thing the members do is vote for the speaker. And so they call the roll of every member, the 435, and they answer with the name of the person they're voting for speaker. And you have to have 218 votes to become speaker. And so with the couple of races still remaining outstanding in California, those become extremely important for Kevin McCarthy, because he's already had three Republicans who have announced they're not going to support him on the floor, which is a surprise and could actually endanger him from not getting the 218. So at this point, they have 220 seats. You know, the races in California could take them to 221 or 222 if they win them both. I think they win at least one there. And that doesn't give him much of a margin. So if he's really is losing, or if he really is losing these three that have said they're not going to support him on the floor, then this could cause him problems, and we could see chaos on that first day of the new session if he or anyone else isn't around the 218 number to become elected speaker.
Is it possible that this is just a jockeying point where different factions of the Republican Party are meeting with him and saying what they expect or want him to do, and they're using that as a leverage point? Is it possible it's just all posturing and will be worked out by the time the vote is taken?
I think there's a lot of that going on. It's a little unusual for people to announce that they're already not going to do something. It really kind of puts them in a box. And the three members that have done this are Andy Biggs from Arizona. Now, he ran against McCarthy in the Republican conference. So they voted for basically their nominee for speaker. And Andy Biggs from Arizona ran there, opposed McCarthy, and McCarthy won 188-31. So there were 31 members of the Republican Party in the conference that didn't vote for him. And so Biggs is one of the three that now says that he's not going to vote for McCarthy on the floor. So this sounds pretty serious on that front. The other two are Matt Gaetz from Florida and Matt Rosendale from Montana, which is a bit of a surprise that he would be one of the three. He hasn't been kind of a rock the boat member up until this point. So it's a bit unusual that they would come out this early and just unequivocally say they're not voting for him.
Mm. Would this have been a non...
So it kind of puts everybody in the box. I think it's kind of odd.
Would this have been a non-issue if there had been this red wave that had been surmised or talked about by pollsters?
Yes, totally. He'd be well underway. if they were around the 230 mark, like you and I had talked about most of this year, there'd be no issue at all.
Yeah. What happened now that it's a few weeks out? Put your Jim Ellis thinking cap on, look into that crystal ball you carry in your briefcase, and, you know, give us the, as they say, the 10,000
foot
level.
You know what I think it really is? Yeah, well, you know what? The redistricting maps clearly worked. Keep in mind, the Daily Kos, you know, the liberal operation that does a lot of work on elections, and I always like to say, you know, their information's really good. Their conclusions are wrong, but their information is good. And what they did after all the redistricting lines were set, and remember, the Republicans looked like they had an advantage in redistricting, and they did at the early part. If you looked at all the states that were going to draw, but some of those states ended up having commissions and others had court maps because they had problems with the map. So at the end of that process, you had legislature, court, and commission maps, and that created the whole playing field we have for 2022. And so once that was set, the Daily Kos went through, and under all the new lines, they saw that 226 districts actually voted for Joe Biden on these new lines. So that was really a majority of Democratic seats that we had there. So it really wasn't a map that tilted to the Republicans. It actually tilted a little bit to the Democrats using those numbers. And I think they're accurate numbers. So the fact that the Republicans are coming in probably at 221, 222 on a Democratic map isn't bad. But I think what happened, two things. One, people, and particularly on Fox News, they were talking about 40 seats. And that was, as you and I talked, that was never going to happen. Not in a redistricting year when the district stabilized. So I think there was an overconfidence and an overestimation to begin with. And secondly, the Republican strategy, they just didn't have much of a message. There was no message as to what they were for. And I think this election tells us, once again, it's not enough not to be your opponent. You still have to tell people what you're for. And the best example of this is you look at the National Republican strategy, which was basically, we're not the Democrats, versus what Ron DeSantis and Marco Rubio did in Florida, where their campaigns were based upon giving people a reason to vote for them. The DeSantis campaign was all about people saying how much his policies have helped make their lives better. And look at the results. DeSantis and Rubio win landslide victories in Florida. And people say, well, Florida's moving to the right, but not that much. And then contrast it to the rest of the country where you didn't see that, and you see different results. Long Island is the only other place where the red wave came ashore, but that was due to the crime issue.
Jim Ellis, ellisinsight.com, is with us. All right, let's look at, quickly, a couple of other races. Let's talk about the L.A. mayor's race, where you have, longtime politician Karen Bass defeating businessman, builder Rick Caruso. Caruso comes in with that executive experience. He's got $110 million he spends on this, and she still ekes it out. What do you attribute to that? The Democratic machine or identity politics or both or what?
Yeah, probably a combination. And you look at all of these cities, and in a year, just not in Los Angeles, but all around the country, where it was pretty clear that, at least from polling, that I guess proved inaccurate once again, that people were in a state of unrest. The right track, wrong track was heavily, the country's on the wrong track. They don't like the job Biden's doing. The inflation's bad. Everything seemed to be bad. And then what do? When they go into the polling booths, they vote for the incumbents. I mean, we had actually no U.S. senator defeated. No incumbent U.S. senator lost of either party. One governor lost of either party. That was in Nevada. And in the House, in the general election, just 8 of over 380 members who ran for re-election, only 8 of them lost. And in 2 of those 8, you had a paired situation where you had 2 incumbents running against each other, so one of them had to lose. So really it was only 6 pure losses for incumbents in the U.S. House.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not something I think anybody would have thought by looking at the polling data and looking like what was unrest in the country.
Yeah.
And you would think the way the status of these cities is, with the homeless and Los Angeles being a mess and all these cities around the country that are in a lot of that same situation, they go out and vote for the same people.
Yeah, they seem to have done that. All right, to the presidential realm. We have, Trump declaring, DeSantis kind of, not saying, but not saying no. You have,
right,
all this going on. What happens there?
I think a lot's changed since the election, and I think there was a clear Republican winner and a clear Republican loser. And I think the clear Republican winner is DeSantis. His campaign was excellent, wins a huge victory, comes out on top because his result was so much different than the rest of the Republicans. And you can point to why, as I said, why. He gave people a reason to vote for him. And I think, in all honesty, that Trump is the big loser. I mean, he can take some hits for some of these weak candidates that did come through the primaries that he endorsed and helped, and they weren't prepared to win a general election. And we saw that in several places, and particularly with the Democrats hopping in the primary and actually spending money to help try to elect these what they perceived as weak candidates to win the Republican nomination. And I think that worked to a degree. And so he's definitely taking hits for that. And so I think if there is a big loser in this election, it is Trump.
How about Mitch McConnell and how he spent money to help ensure his own reelection, but maybe not the best to win elections?
Well, maybe not to win elections, but it actually worked for him, didn't it? Because he did get reelected as leader. The spending money to help Lisa Murkowski defeat another incumbent or another Republican opponent when it could have gone into a place like Nevada, where that election came down to just a few votes at the end. Yeah, I mean, I think that is he should deserve some criticism, I think, for that.
All right, Jim Ellis, ellisinsight.com. We will talk next week, as we always do. Thank you for your insight. ellisinsight.com is the website. Jim Ellis, thank you so much for being with us. And round out that Thanksgiving weekend with another piece of pie.
Yes, thank you, Larry. I shall.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Sunday Morning Newsmakers with Larry Marino.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.